I dear King Yudhisthira,
the gopis, by their lusty desires, Kamsa, by his fear, Shishupal and other kings, by envy, the Yadus, by their familial relationship with Krishna, you Pandavas, by your great affection for Krishna, and we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna. Purport by his divine grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami's Prabhupada. Different persons achieve different types of mukti. Sayujya, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya, and Shashti, according to their own intense desire, which is called Bhava. Thus it is described here that the gopis, by their lusty desires, which were based upon their intense love for Krishna, became the most beloved devotees of the Lord. Although the gopis at Vrindavan expressed their lusty desires in relationship with the paramour, Parakya Ras, they actually had no lusty desires. This is significant of spiritual advancement. Their desires appeared lusty, but actually they were not the lusty desires of the material world. Chaitamrita compares the desires of the spiritual and material world to gold and iron. Both gold and iron are metal, but there's a vast difference in their value. The lusty desires of the gopis for Krishna are compared to gold, and material and lusty desires are compared to iron. Kamsa and other enemies of Krishna merged into the existence of Brahman. But why should Krishna's friends and devotees have the same position? Krishna's devotees attain the association of the Lord as his constant companions, either in Vrindavan or in the Vaikuntha planets. Similarly, although Narada Muni wanders in the three worlds, he has exalted devotion for Narayana. Aishwarya Man. The Vrishnis and the Yadus and the father and mother of Krishna and Vrindavan all have familial relationships with Krishna. Krishna's foster father and mother in Vrindavan, however, are more exalted than Vasudeva and Devaki. Translation, please repeat. My dear King Yudhisthira, the gopis, by their lusty desires, Kamsa, by his fear, Shishupal, and other kings, by envy, the Yadus, by their familial relationship with Krishna. You Pandavas, by your great affection for Krishna. And we, the general devotees, by our devotional service, have obtained the mercy of Krishna. Om Aganatara Mandasya Ganatana Shakaya Takshuram Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. This verse, the different examples are given by which different personalities, both demons and devotees, obtained varieties of liberation from Brahman to the intimate affection which only the Brijavasins have for Krishna. Due to their different varieties of approaching Krishna, the gopis are given as the highest examples of pure love, which evokes the fullest realization, revelation, and affection for Krishna in response. But even Kamsa, by his fear, Kamsa is a personification of fear. And Shishupal, by his envy, they also attain liberation. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada recommends that we just approach Krishna for whatever motive, whatever reason, whether full of material desires, free of material desires, desiring liberation, what to speak of desiring love. Whatever our desire, we should approach Krishna. Because Krishna is like a touchstone. Whatever comes in contact with him becomes purified. And human life is meant solely for purification. If one misuses this human form of life for sense gratification, even without approaching Krishna, Krishna still acts as a touchstone. He fulfills the desires of everyone. If one desires sense gratification, human form of life is not an appropriate body. And therefore Krishna reciprocates. He fulfills the desires of those two-legged animals by giving appropriate animal forms or lesser forms. And Srila Prabhupada uses the example of the pigeon as being appropriate for one who's attached to sex life. Because pigeons can have tremendously more sex life than humans. And they can actually enjoy it much more. Because they don't have all the emotional anxiety about whether they're going to get caught. It's perfectly appropriate. There's no guilt. There's no shame for pigeons to indulge in that type of activity. But if the human engages in animal propensities, he is conditioning himself, he is preparing himself. His subtle body is actually becoming that of an animal. And the subtle body which carries over to the next birth will create, by one's consciousness, an appropriate body to fulfill the desires inherent to the particular form of consciousness of the living entity is developed. But it is such a great shame that having attained this precious human form of life, the culmination of the sojourn through 8,400,000 species of life, just living and dying and suffering, and thinking one is enjoying it. But what is taken as enjoyment in the material world is not enjoyment at all. It's a mistaken conception that a temporary, slight relief from the miseries of life is pleasurable. Just like a person smashing his head against the wall. He stops and thinks, oh, this is very nice. Or someone who's dunked under the water by the king in the form of punishment. When he's brought up for a short gasp of air just to sustain his life so he could be tortured a little bit longer. He's thinking, this is wonderful. It's not wonderful. It's not nice. It's not pleasure. It's a temporary relief. But it's very short-lived. And even that's not relief. Any form of pleasure in this world does not give relief to the sufferings. Relief is found in liberation. And therefore, before motives for approaching God, beginning with kama, sense gratification, for which one indulges or engages in dharma, religion, for artha, economic development, which is essential to go back to that kama. But it's all so infected with frustration that ultimately the living entity turns back to God for moksha. Just relieve me from the suffering. But that's no less selfish than all the other ambitions. Krishna is selfless. His desire is to please his devotees. And the devotees' desire is to please Krishna. And in that love, in that relationship, the unlimited satisfaction of the soul is realized. And that is pleasure. That is what human life is meant for. That is what all life is meant for. But due to the influence Maya, living entities, forget their purpose and their goal and their spiritual inheritance. They just wander aimlessly through samsara. So, Krishna is like a touchstone. And Srila Prabhupada is quoting Chaitanya Charitamrita in this purport regarding the lusty desires of the gopis who attain perfection through that lust. But that lust, it appears like lust, but it's actually the antithesis and the cure for the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world, lust. The gopis were mad to enjoy with Krishna, and this looks like lust. But their desire was the most selfless, sacrificial expression of pure love. And what does love mean? It means the desire to please, the desire to serve, and cater to the pleasure of the beloved. And the more pure that love is, the less desire there will be for any kind of reciprocation. And therefore, in the mood of the gopis, Mahaprabhu prays that Krishna embrace his maidservant, praying in the mood of the gopis, let Krishna embrace his maidservant, or let him trample me under his feet if he so desires. Or let him devastate my mind by showing favor to someone else right before my eyes and ignoring me. He is a devotee after all, and he can do whatever he likes, but he remains unconditionally, eternally the only Lord of my heart. This is the mood of the Brijadasis. Pure, selfless, sacrificial service for the pleasure of their beloved Sri Krishna. And what is Krishna's desire? The pleasure of his devotees, which is reciprocal with the extent of their purity and their selflessness. And therefore, liberation is condemned because it's still selfish. Just wanting relief from the sufferings of this world is still a selfish desire. And what would be the result? You can enter into the divine light of the Lord's energy, which is so exhilarating, so thrilling, so phantasmagorical. But it's lonely. The living entity will not be satisfied there. The living entity cannot stay there, because he becomes lonely. He's longing and yearning for love. Because we're born of Krishna's love, we're meant for love, and we'll never be happy with anything else. And therefore, Krishna is always making arrangements and opportunities that the living entities can remember their loving relationship with him. Or but that they'll somehow contemplate that there must be something higher to life than just living and dying and thinking we're enjoying when we're really just suffering the emptiness, the loneliness of the soul disconnected from Krishna. This chapter is the questions and answers between Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadeva Goswami regarding how is it that we can say that the Lord is impartial, and it appears that he's very partial to his devotees. And you can go on and on indefinitely saying, giving, you know, explanations why he's impartial, and giving the antithesis in that he appears to be partial, which may be due to our perception because of our dualities, or the natural response of Krishna towards one who approaches him with any motive. But Krishna generally does not interfere with the free will of the living entity, because that free will, which is expressed in either accepting him or rejecting him, surrendering to him or rebelling against him, and imitating him, and competing with it, if you're trying to enjoy. This is the basic varieties of expression of our free will, and Krishna honors that free will because that is necessary for love. Love has to be a free choice. It has to be freely given. It cannot be forced, and it will not force itself. But then what would be the hope for living entities if Krishna did not actually intervene? But Krishna does not intervene. And therefore, we understand that the devotees of the Lord are more merciful than the Lord because they do intervene in our lives, in our free will. There is two varieties of Bhagavat. Book Bhagavat, which is passive, and devotee Bhagavat, which is active. The book Bhagavat is eternally there giving us guidance, but is passive. Will not intervene in our rebellious expression of our envy of Krishna. The devotees do intervene. And therefore, we say that they are more merciful than even the Lord Himself. And this is the highest expression of love, because to intervene between the rebellious soul and Krishna is a very hazardous, very painful, very troublesome service, requiring the greatest sacrifice. Because the message of Godhead is not welcome in the material world by the envious souls. So, the devotees, and the gopis are actually the best example. The residents of Vrindavan are the best example of preaching, because they have that life, that love, which makes the living entity contemplate. So there must be something higher than what goes on in the name of love in this world, which is just dramatized exploitation. And that's why it's so miserable. Whatever we try to extract from this material world, or the material bodies of other jivas to which we become so attached, we'll have to pay back the debt incurred by trying to exploit material nature. And therefore there's an endless cycle of action and reaction in birth and death, which has no end until and unless someone intervenes. That someone being the devotee of the Lord, who has the compassion, that feels the pain of the Lord, that who wants the living entities back home into his loving shelter and loving relationships with him. But they're rebelling against his love, and in that rebellious spirit they're just suffering the pains of repeated birth and death and frustrated attempts to enjoy this world. So when the devotees intervene on our behalf. And how does our path back home begin? By Sambhagyata Sukriti. When Krishna sees that the living entity is the least bit receptive to his message, he arranges an opportunity by which they can attain Sambhagyata Sukriti, some unknown devotional service, which means that somehow they've come in contact with the devotee and rendered some service unknown. And that unknown devotional service is the beginning of their conscious devotional service, because that's the beginning of their spiritual life. And whatever we attain in spiritual life, that is an eternal asset, that even though it may be forgotten, it remains an eternal asset to the heart and will be continued at some point when there's another opportunity. So when the devotees in this world try to intervene between our rebellious spirit and Krishna's loving call for us to come back home, back to Godhead, they reveal in their lives what love actually is. It is a sacrificial giving offered to the beloved. And that example, and the devotees, by their preaching in this world, by their interrupting the illusory pursuit for pleasure in this world of the jivas, they become the object of the envy of the conditioned souls who want to remain in forgetfulness of Krishna. It is a very thankless task trying to preach in this material world, because the living entities are not here because they want to come back to Krishna. They're here because they want to rebel against Krishna. And the devotees of the Lord, by their sacrifice, by their struggles, by their compassionate intervention in our otherwise hopeless plight, they reveal what actual love is. And it is so attractive. And then it awakens in the conditioned souls a desire to emulate their love. As the years go by, and we hear more and more the remembrances of Srila Prabhupada, whose life was a perfection, the perfection of love and sacrifice and compassion and mercy. When we see the divine arrangement, the divine plan, and the long history of the Lord's redemptive will playing out through the ages and culminating with Srila Prabhupada's arrival in the Western world, which is the very stronghold of Maya. When Narayana previously was wandering throughout the universe, and he attained darshan of Lord Gauranga many long time before his manifest presence in this world. And Narada Muni was crying, feeling compassion for the conditioned souls in this world who are suffering so much due to their aversion to Krishna. And he was imploring the Lord to come and redeem them. And the Lord said, yes, I will descend in the Kali Yuga, that dark black age, in a golden form, to distribute pure love of Krishna in the mood of the Vrijavasis of Vrindavan, the residents of Vrindavan. And Narada was pleading with the Lord, as do all the great souls, but give it indiscriminately. Bestow your mercy to all. And Lord Gauranga told Narada that yes, he would preach not the length and breadth of Varsha. But Narada still was not satisfied. The Vaishnava's desire is not satisfied until all living entities are on their way home, back to Godhead. So sensing Narada's compassion, Lord Gauranga told Narada that in those far-off, distant lands of the Lechas and the Avaras, where people try to flee from the mercy of God, who generally only descends in Bharatvarsha because of the people's dignity in following his own plan of Varnashram Dharma. In those lands that people try to flee from the message of God, I will send my Sina Bhakti Bhakta, which we know is Srila Prabhupada. So every year we're hearing more and more remembrances revealing the divine plan, the empowerment, the Lord's desire fulfilling through the ages preceding Srila Prabhupada's coming to the West. When ISKCON devotees for the first time ever performed the complete 9-day parikrama of Navadvipa Dham, just as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had done in his days, when we came to this beautiful Champak forest named Champahat, where Jayadeva Goswami previously had worshipped Radha and Krishna with those champa flowers. And Radha and Krishna actually appeared to Jayadeva Goswami in their combined before his very eyes into the form of Lord Ramana, and revealed to Jayadeva Goswami how he would come later in the Kali Yuga and enjoy his poems and songs as inspiration. In that forest, a beautiful forest, is a beautiful temple, Horagadana, the worshipable deities of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And when we came to that temple, toward the end of the day, time to set up camp. Not many devotees the first time, but looking for a place to set up camp and having darshan, beautiful deities, Horagadana. And we noticed the Pujari was crying. And then we inquired, why are you crying? And he said that he had come there with his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, many years before. And his Gurudev told him, you stay here in this temple in the forest and serve Gurudev. And since that day, that Pujari, Nayananda Das, Babaji now, Ramachari then, he stayed there very faithfully serving those deities. And he was crying, seeing all these Iskcon devotees coming from America, mainly America and Europe. Very few Indian devotees on that yatra, mainly European and American. And he was crying, he said, you American and European devotees are the first ones for so many years who are performing this worship of the Holy Land exactly the way that my Gurudev himself instructed and performed the Abhidhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhadhyabhad
seeing this great soul with so much faith and love in the orders of his spiritual master. For so many years, they're practically alone in that forest, worshiping Guru Vidyanath, is now seeing all his desires fulfilled by devotees from all over the world coming for the darshan of the deities he had been practically single-handedly serving for so many years. And then, and everyone was crying, and then he told the sannyasis, "This is your room." But it was his room. He said, "No, I will leave." "No, don't leave." He said, "No. You must take up residence in my room." And then he went out and slept in the kitchen, which is another building out back. And the humility, the love, was just melting everyone's heart. Little did we know that as a brahmachari, this Nayananda Das, then brahmachari, was noticing the wonderful example of Srila Prabhupada's devotion. He noticed that, well, it began when he was out preaching as a young brahmachari. And when he had come to Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada had an open door policy that anyone from Golden Mark could come to his house anytime the door was open, and he would move out of his room and put those brahmacharis or sannyasis in his own room. Srila Prabhupada could sleep somewhere else. So this Nayananda Das brahmachari was relaying to devotees how he noticed that Srila Prabhupada has such a spirit of sacrifice, which is an expression of his great love for his Guru Maharaj Shri Krishna. And even though he was actually very senior to most devotees, because out of his humility he did not take initiation, he did not move into the temple until much later on, he was a householder doing his business. But he had another room as part of his business set up for devotees, so whenever they would preach, they would have a place. And he said that, I won't get off, but anyway,
This Nayananda Brahmachari noticed that Srila Prabhupada had a very special relationship with his Guru Maharaj. And he explained how one day he came for darshan of his Guru Maharaj, just having come from a business trip, got off the train with a suitcase and came to the mat. But the darshan had just ended, which he was about to sit on the Saraswati, and the doors were closed and the sannyasis were just leaving. And Srila Prabhupada, after coming up the steps, saw he was late. So he offered obeisances with great humility to all the devotees, even those who were actually far junior to him as far as seniority goes. And he walked down the steps and just started to vanish into the darkness from which he had come. When the doors to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's room opened, and he came out, and he called to Srila Prabhupada to come. And then the sannyasis were thinking the darshan was resuming, and they started to crowd around, and he made a way, made a path, in motion to Srila Prabhupada. He took him in his room and closed the doors. And the senior preachers and sannyasis were thinking, well, who is this grihastha just coming out of the darkness with a suitcase, on his business trip, and having Gurudev's own personal darshan? And Nayananda Brahmachari noted that they were in there for a very long time. And when the doors finally opened again and Srila Prabhupada came out, with such humility and love, looking each devotee in the eyes, even the very junior devotees, offering them obeisances. And then he just departed into the darkness from where he had come. So he noted that this Abha has a very intimate, special relationship with Guru Maharaj. And then he explained how that year, it was the last year that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was personally leading the devotees on the full 9-day Navadvip Dham Parikrama. And he set up camp in Chandahat. And there was thousands of devotees in that darshan where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was lecturing. And that was just shortly after the devotees had come back from Europe. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was explaining that these devotees went to preach in the West, meaning Europe, utilizing the blood of the Gaudiya Math, meaning the meager donations begged by the brahmacharis. They spent the funds, and they were not really very successful. A couple of German scholars became initiated devotees, inspired by Professor Sunyal's Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Very intellectual work regarding the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which actually inspired some pundits of Germany to come to India to become initiated disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. But other than that, the holy name was not spreading through every town and village as Lord Gauranga had predicted, and all the acharyas of his line had endeavored. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, lecturing on that to those thousands of pilgrims there in Chandahat, was explaining that my father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, had this intense desire that the holy name spread and the message of Lord Gauranga, the teachings of the six Goswamis, spread in the Western world. But he told me later in his life that you will have to take this mission upon your own shoulders, because I was not able to succeed. Made some endeavor, sent some books to the West. You will have to continue this mission. And in that same lecture, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati explained that just before his mother, Bhagavati Devi, left this world, she called him to her bedside and said, your father had this great intense desire that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya go to the West. It was not fulfilled in his lifetime. You must carry on. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, at that time, very old himself, in reaching near the end of his lila in this world, was imploring the thousands of pilgrims before him. And now, someone here will have to take up that mission. And then his eyes scanned the audience of thousands of pilgrims And then Nayananda Brahmacharya, he's describing, said he saw his guru's eyes just looking at him. When he was asking, who will do it? Why is he looking at me? And he turned around and saw behind him was Srila Prabhupada. He was actually looking at Srila Prabhupada. Their eyes were locked in intense gaze for some time. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati again turned to the audience and said, I have a prediction that very soon the next one of my disciples to go west will succeed in the mission desired by my father, instructed by my guru, attempted by myself, that this holy name of Krishna, as predicted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, would spread to every town and village of the world. And Srila Prabhupada did not get encouragement from his associates in general. Rather, they discouraged him. And he was pleading, let us work together to push on the mission of Guru Maharaj. And they're saying, Krishna consciousness go to the west? The Malechas and the Avinas take up pure bhakti? It's impossible. And it was impossible by all material considerations. And Srila Prabhupada, he said, but Mahaprabhu predicted the holy name will spread to you every 10 of those of the world. And they argued, the world means Bharatvarsha. There's nothing outside of there as far as hopes for Krishna consciousness. He said, no. It means the whole planet. No, that's not possible. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati concluded his lecture by saying, the next one of my disciples to go, I predict, will bring back to the world, to the holy land of Lord Ganga and Krishna. And Nayananda Ramachari, now Nayananda Babaji, said, your Guru Maharaj has succeeded in following the instructions of my beloved Guru Devashiva Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. So, one devotee was explaining how one night, actually, so many devotees were explaining how Srila Prabhupada, through his life, would be heard, like at Radha Damodar Temple. One devotee nearby would hear him crying out in the middle of the night, hey Gurudev, hey Rupa Sanatana, please give me your mercy. Please empower me to fulfill this impossible mission of my Gurudev. And one pujari in Shantipur at the house of the great Acharya explained, he actually came to Mayapur with a back to Godhead, asking, where is a disciple of Srila Prabhupada? Is he Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada? And some of the devotees said, well, where are his disciples? He said, I just want you to know that for so many years I was the pujari in Shantipur at the great Acharya's house. And many years ago, I saw this one Vaishnav gentleman. But he would always sit in the back of the temple and he was always crying. So I never interrupted to introduce myself or ask him to introduce himself. And just very respectfully observed. And then he did not come for so long. But one day a sannyasi came and sat in the same place. And I noticed that he was crying. So I took him prasadam and then saw that, oh, it's my old friend, Abhacharan. He didn't know, even know him at that time. He said, oh, it's my old friend. So he said, I see you've come back. Who are you? For so many years I've just seen you sitting here in the back of the temple crying. Who are you? And why are you here? And he explained that Srila Prabhupada said, my name is Abhayacharananda Vinda Bhaktivedanta Swami, and I have a very grave mission
bestowed by the Gurudev to take the mission of Lord Chaitanya to the West. So I've come here because in this place is blessed by the dust from the lotus feet of Sri Advaita Acharya, where he would meet with Lord Nityananda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and make their plans to spread the holy name to every town and village. So I'm praying in the dust at their feet for the empowerment, for their blessings. And he asked me, "You please bless me." And he was crying. And then the Bajari started crying, "Well, how can I bless you but whatever I have?" And then he said, "This is my last day here. Tomorrow I'm leaving for the West. I don't know where this ship is going or how to proceed. But I have great faith in the instructions that I've heard." So that Pujari said, "That was his last day there." But after some years, he began noticing white Vaishnavas. White-skinned Vaishnavas. He didn't know who they were or where they'd come from. And they started coming to that temple in Shantipur more and more. He couldn't speak English. He couldn't ask them. And then one day, one devotee gave him back to Godhead. And he opened the magazine and he saw a document of Srila Prabhupada's life. He said, "That's him. That's my old friend." He saw this Grihastha and this sannyasi. He did it. He went to the West. He was successful. He's bringing the world here to the land of Lord Chaitanya. And he was just crying. He was telling all the devotees, "I just want you to know that there was many years of preparation and tears and sacrifice and pleading and praying behind. He's coming to you." And one devotee explained how one night when Srila Prabhupada was a sannyasi and he heard someone calling Abhay Chandaravinda. That wasn't the name he was going by. But someone was calling in the middle of the night and he kept calling. So Srila Prabhupada got up and said, "Who's calling?" And he went off of his obeisances at the different samadhis, and then the samadhi was Guru Maharaj. He had a darshan of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was asking, "Why haven't you gone?" He said, "Well, Guru Maharaj, I don't know the way. I don't know the path. I don't know what arrangements have been made." And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was saying, "Just go. We're all with you. There's so much divine empowerment behind you. The arrangements have all been made. Don't you know, in the Western world, they're calling for you. They're crying for you." And when we heard that, you know, how did he know? Because here in the Western world, before Srila Prabhupada came, there were some individuals who were calling and crying for the Guru Maharaj to come, having some faith that in this very lifetime, he would be blessed with this darshan. So, thereafter, Srila Prabhupada, he just went out begging. And wherever there would, he would have any kind of program, he would tell everyone that, "I have this order of my spiritual master. I don't know how to proceed. If anyone can help with any arrangements, please tell me." And then one person in the audience came forward and told Srila Prabhupada that he was the secretary for Srimati Maharaj and would arrange a meeting with her. And when there was some delay in having that meeting, Srila Prabhupada would sit at her doorstep and keep telling the secretary, "Please arrange for a meeting." And when he finally met Srimati Maharaj, she was saying, "You want to go to the West?" She was thinking he just wanted to go there to die. And she was not inspired to honor that request. "I mean, you're such an old man, 69 when he left, turned 70 on the ship. You're such an old man to go the way. You don't know anybody, you don't know the ways. You don't want to hear about Krishna." But he was so determined. So this is the ultimate expression of love. In this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining, however you approach Krishna,
through lust, like the gopis, through fear, like Kamsa, through envy, like Shishupal. Just approach Krishna because he's like a touchstone. He will transform all base qualities into gold. Anything that comes in contact with him, be it calm, which is like iron, or the pure prema of the gopis, it'll all find its fulfillment in service to Krishna. But what is the love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan? It is such a pure sacrificial giving to Krishna that even if for the relief of his fictitious headache they would have to go to hell forever, no consideration. If it brings Krishna some relief, some pleasure, then eternal damnation is of no concern. This is love. What is the wonderful reciprocation from Krishna? That when a devotee is so selfless, he wants nothing in return for his service other than the pleasure of Krishna, he receives the empowerment of Krishna. Unless one is empowered by Krishna, he cannot preach Krishna consciousness very effectively. So, Krishna consciousness means Trinadapi Sunijena, Dharadapi Sishna. One must be humbler than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, desiring nothing for oneself, but offering all respects to others. In that state of mind, you can chant the Lord. But how can a living entity so infected with pride since time immemorial become prideless, become sinless, become more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree? Because we have an example who is better than a touchstone. You can't say Srila Prabhupada is like a touchstone because he did not just fulfill our desires. He fulfilled desires beyond which we could ever even imagine. The teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the love of the inhabitants of Vrindavan as distributed by Lord Chaitanya, this was a desire which no one could even conceive. The deepest aspirations of the soul found fulfillment in Srila Prabhupada's teachings, and therefore we say he's better than a touchstone. And although we have to become devoid of all sense of false prestige, we should be very proud in our Gurudeva or Param Guru for some of you, that we have some humble menial service at his lotus feet. That is the blessing which fulfills all desires. It's the beginning of our path, which is not clear, but is assured of success if we have faith in his instructions as he had faith in the instructions of his Guru Maharaj. Because for one who has equal faith in the instructions of the spiritual master and Krishna, the ultimate goal of life is certain to be attained simply by following with humility, faith, and love the instructions of the spiritual master. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? No questions. It's complete agreement. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri. Thank you.
So, I haven't heard of it.